Start your own radio show now and join our amazing radio family of fun and interesting talent. Be the radio star you've always wanted to be. Visit LATalkRadio.com or email info at LATalkRadio.com now and start your own show today.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday evening in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks, California. And my name is Jim Christina. I'm the host of the show that you're listening to now, which is The Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. I'm in the studio tonight with my permanent temporary co-host, Russ Avison. He shows up every fourth Thursday. Hi, Russ.
Hi. Hey, you know, I was listening in the intro there that when they said, you know, you're listening to The Writer's Block.
Yeah.
It sounds like we're going to have this really hard-hitting news program.
I know, huh?
Yeah, it does.
Well, we do, actually.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it is. That's the way the bulb bounces. How you doing? How's things down in Fillmore?
It is exciting.
I don't know how else to put it.
It has been busier than hell.
Really?
Yeah, it's been hot and it's been busy, and neither Karen or I are getting enough sleep.
Yeah.
So we're borderline on wanting to shoot one another.
Yeah, oh yeah, I know that.
And she has a gun and I don't. So
want to borrow one?
I think I might need to.
Okay.
No. But it's we're halfway through the summertime and it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, my sister-in-law's been here all week.
Oh, that's why you look so happy.
The Wiz, she's been here, and I just want to just shout out and say, hey, Wiz. Her name is actually Beverly Jordan, and she's from North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Same place where my errant daughter is floating around someplace, and
yes.
I have no idea where. And, of course, my wife, Jerry, who is not only our booking agent, but also the producer of The Writer's Block. She's there, and she's probably got her ears on tonight.
Uh-oh.
Hi, Jer. Okay, The Writer's Block is brought to you by Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing. And Tuscany Bay is in the business of helping brand new writers, indie writers, from the get-go on their book all the way through the printing process, if that's how far they want to take it. So if you are a new writer and you're independent and you are confused or want to know how to do stuff...
Wait, that counts me in there.
It does
confused,
count you, and that's why I gave you a card. give us a call. The number you can reach us at is 805-795-3165. And we'll be happy to help you. We're really reasonable as far as pricing goes. And you don't have to sell your firstborn. And also brought to you by Out West. And it used to be Out West Boutique and Cultural Center, but now they're just Out West. And they are your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyles. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books. I have a lot of books there, and they're all signed, incidentally. Music and general merchandise. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rock Mount Ranch Wear, Tan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. And their toll-free number is 877-340-9378. And if you want to attend one of their concert series, which actually is tomorrow night, it's the fourth Friday of every month, the number there is a direct line. It is 661-347-9700. I don't know who they have on. Actually, I do. I wrote it down, but I didn't bring the paper with me. So, Bobby Jean, if you're listening and you want to call in and tell me who's on the show tonight or tomorrow night, let us know. But that number, direct dial, is 661-347-9700. The tickets are $25. But if you tell them that you heard it on The Writer's Block, they go for $20. So there you have it. And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM Truckload, that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski and tell him you heard it here in The Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible, is what you want. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. So call at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. And call them today. They're nice folks.
You didn't tell me that Writer's Block is now a commercial program. Jeez.
I know, 5 minutes of commercials.
Spread those out or something.
I know. Well, we should. But you know what? We get them all done at the top of the show, and then we have the rest of the time to BS.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, I was going to tell you something, and I totally spaced on it. Oh, I was on Sam's show yesterday morning.
Yes.
Interesting. He's got a new host. Her name is Rachel. Help me out, Rachel, if you're listening. Rachel Wolfson.
Okay.
And she's a direct relation of Steve Wolfson, who is the DA for Clark County, Nevada, Las Vegas.
Oh, all right.
And her dad, Steve Wolfson, has a TV show on ID, which is called Sin City Justice.
Oh.
But more importantly and more interestingly,
yes,
her mother is the judge that put OJ away.
So that must have been interesting discussion.
Yeah, well, we actually discussed it off the air. We talked about a lot of other crap on the air, but we really got into it.
Is she an attorney also?
No, she's a comedian, I think.
Oh.
She's very nice, and she's just a really sharp as a tack.
You know, Sam, he goes through the co-host underwear changing.
Yeah, it's like we talked about that too.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. How Jewish and Italian mothers are so much alike, you know. You can't have too much underwear. Hang on, I have to take a drink.
Okay.
Well, our guest tonight is a repeat performer. He is he's an author. He is the king of the pulp magazines and pulp fiction. The guy is absolutely amazing. He's from L.A. Actually, he's not from L.A., but that's where he lives now. And he's been banging around his whole life, and he's got this niche, and he's just one of the most fascinating people in the world you want to talk to. And let's see if we can get him on here right now. His name is Gary Phillips. Gary, you with us?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Hey, before we get started, I was at the Phoenix airport, and I ran into a friend of yours. He was a very young African-American cowboy, and I believe he told me his name was Hoppy. Is that right?
Hoppy? No, I don't know a Hoppy, but all right, let's go with that.
Well, wait a minute. He said he knew you, or Hop, maybe?
Oh, yes, Hop. Yes, Hop Hopkinson.
There you go. See?
There you go. You're right.
Yeah, he was a really nice young man. Tremendous young man.
Yeah. I'll be doggone. You're right.
Yeah, we were talking about... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, so fascinating. What a small world.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the older you get, the smaller the world gets.
Exactly.
That's because the older you get, the more the world you fill up.
That's right. Well, that's true too.
That's right. That's
so anyway, we talked about you for a while, and I said, yeah, I know you because we've had you on our show, and you're a great guest, and you're going to be back on this year. And he was going, well, I know Gary. Gary's a really good guy. And I said, yeah, I know. We've talked to him. He's a good guy.
Oh, that's so great, man. Yeah. But you're right. He's the kind of cowboy. He's kind of like this. A kind of back to the land kind of cowboy. You're right.
That's he is. And like I said, a very nice young man. So I, kudos to having friends like that and me.
Yeah. He used to work for the Conservation Corps.
Yeah, that's what he said. So okay,
that's right.
Okay, well, let's get into you. You know, you sent over an illustrated novel. I guess is what you'd want to call it.
Graphic novel.
Okay, a graphic novel. Well, graphic is the good graphic, word for it. Yeah,
it is definitely graphic. Yeah,
it is right. Definitely graphic, and it's called Peepland.
That's correct.
Now, before we get it truly into Peepland, because I think Russ was enamored. He's actually looking at the pictures on it again.
And it's not for the kids.
It is definitely not for the kids. Is this one of a series?
Well, it was. It's actually a collection of. I'm the co-writer.
All right.
With the lovely and talented Krista Faust.
Correct.
And it came out. It came out toward the end of last year, and then it ran for 5 issues from Hard Case Crime. Hard Case Crime is a prose publisher, but now they do a comics line through Titan Comics, which is a UK publisher.
Uh-huh.
And so Peepland is set in the last bad old days of Times Square in the late 80s.
Right.
In fact,
pre-Disney.
In particular, our crime story takes place on that week between Christmas and New Year's Eve.
Right.
And basically it's set in those days, Times Square was not a safe place. It was a grungy area. It was where the XXX theaters were,
right.
and the grindhouse and the peep
and the peep shows.
Our peep shows, exactly. And our heroine in the tale is Roxy Bell, kind of punk young lady who works in one of those peep booths, and I don't want to give away the plot, but suffice it to say, an incriminating, and this is how, you know, remember we're going back in time,
right.
An incriminating VHS tape is left in her booth, and this sets in motion the plot.
Which is, the way the guy leaves it is tremendous. I just think that was brilliant. I don't know who came up with that one, but that was brilliant. So I'm not going
to
go any further.
To be pursued by the bad guy.
Exactly. Exactly. Here, hold on to this until I come back. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Only he doesn't make it back.
Who did your illustrations? Who was the illustrator?
Believe it or not, you wouldn't know it from the name necessarily. Andrea Camarini, who's actually male, but he's Italian. He's not even Italian American. He's Italian Italian. But he speaks great English. And as far as I know, he's actually never set foot in the United States, let alone New York. And so we just supply them a lot of reference material. And of course, now these days, of course, with the internet and Google and everything, it was, you know, that's very helpful.
Sure.
But also, we gave them some ideas for different movies, you know, particularly different 80s New York centered. Movies, Fort Apache, or even late 70s, Fort Apache,
right?
Even French Connection, of course, the 7-Ups, just to get a look and feel for New York in those days.
Right, right.
Well, he did an amazing job.
He did, didn't he? He really did. I mean, and of course, he would run the various sketches once he started to lay out the pages by us, and because Krista herself had actually worked in those booths in those days, she was very familiar with, like, for instance, I didn't know this, like, nowhere in Times Square, at least in those days, was there an actual alley. I guess there were passages between buildings, but there really weren't any alleys. And so, you know, things like that, we made sure that we would be historically and visually accurate in the book, in the story.
Well, he was, and you were.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a scene in there that Russ brought this to my attention earlier, it's just before the guy gets dumped into the subway.
Yes,
and he's got it down to the graffiti on the subway cars. I mean,
that's right.
No, it's
that's
true.
Right.
Exactly. And his point of view on a lot of these things. I mean, he changes just like if you were a director and drawing out your storyboards.
Right.
I mean, I was fascinated, and I have to tell you, I've only read one graphic novel, and it was only one book. It was The Walking Dead. And
yes.
I had a hard time with it. I just, for me, to try and sit down and read a graphic novel is very difficult. So when I looked at your book, I was really taken in by the artistry. It just, the writer, you know, the artist, rather, is amazing. And then I kind of went back and kind of tried to follow the story with that.
Well, comics, you're right, but comics are it does take a little bit of doing if you're, you know, used to just, you know, words on the page.
Right.
It does take a little bit of doing to assimilate yourself in reading a comic book because you're right. It is both a visual experience, but it's also about the words. And our job as the writers, of course, are to, in a lot of ways, not let our, you know, like in a movie script, we don't let our dialogue get in the way of telling the story.
Right.
So you have to be very spare and very efficient, and you also have to be very clear because you're also describing to the artist what is happening in each panel.
Sure.
And because then, and of course, things have to progress along, and you know, and there's a lot of characters we're moving around in People, and of course there's several subplots, and so all these things have to kind of happen in an organic and a flowing way, and the pace has to be such that, you know, like you said, you can't confuse the reader, you can't jumble it up with too much stuff, because otherwise people lose interest.
Right. Now, I've noticed also that in good, and I'm not, you know, when I was like 9 or 10, I used to read comic books. I haven't read comic books in years. But I've noticed that in the panels that you sent on Peepland, is that each panel tells the story of each panel. I mean, that story is complete.
That's right.
And so the dialogue is kept down to a screeching minimum, because
because
you don't need it. I mean, like the written word, the paragraph is telling the story that your panel is telling, but it's doing it in words, and you're doing it in visual.
Exactly, and you don't want to be repetitious. In other words, that's the point. If you're telling the story, you're telling the story visually. You don't need to then tell them what they're seeing in the dialogue.
Right, because they're seeing it.
The artist is doing their job. They're telling their story. And our job then is to help you get some sense of these characters and the movement.
Right.
But again, everything has to work together, because otherwise if you as the writer, or the writers in our case, because there's two of us, are out of sync with the artist, then it's a hopeless cause.
Right. Before you get there, Russ, let me ask one more question, because I'm fixing to jump into this dual dual author thing myself. Not in a graphic, not in an illustrated book, but in an actual novel. Did you guys like consistently talk back and forth when you were writing this, so you knew what other person was doing?
Oh, we had to.
Yeah,
we had to. So first of all, we had to work out. We had to. Krista had written an original screenplay, based on her experiences in those days, and of course, but then amping it up, because we had to give it a real plot, give it a real crime element,
right?
And so that was a great basis from which then we could depart, and then we beat out a kind of different story or expanded that story from the screenplay. And then, so we would alternate. So sometimes I might write half the book and send it to her, and she'd give me some notes, or she would change some things, or she would write half the book and send it to me, and I would change some things. So in that way, it proved to be a good process as a way to sort of synthesize and kind of hopefully create the one voice, as opposed to all these different voices telling you the story of Peepland as events progress and as the subplots progress over this 1 week period.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, Russell.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got two questions. First one is, when you develop your story, like did you start with just the whole story laid out and then kind of back up and say, okay, we want to show this scene, we want to show that scene? Or did you go to the artist and say, here's our story, come up with the storyboards for it?
Oh, that's good.
I guess the former rather than the latter, Russ, in that once we outlined the story and had some sense of what the scenes were, what the major scenes were, then we wrote what they call full scripts. In other words, when you write a comic book script, it's different than a movie script, because in a movie script you don't spend a lot of time describing visuals other than panoramic view of the city or panoramic view of the beach or whatever, right? And you might be specific to the point where you say there's a shack on the beach, but the only reason you would say that is because, of course, something's got to happen in that shack.
Sure.
And to some extent, I guess that's true even in comics, because obviously you can't draw everything in every panel. So you have to then, the best advice I ever got on writing comics is, each panel is frozen action. Generally speaking, one thing happens per panel, right? Sometimes two things, but generally speaking, one thing happens. Something could be in the background, as Jerry talked about, that you could have some graffiti on the subway cars, but that's kind of an incidental, right? That's a kind of thing that kind of adds depth to what's happening, but it's not necessarily the main action.
Right.
So your job as the writer is to communicate. So when I say we write a full script, we say panel one, and we describe what's in panel one, and we write the dialogue, we write the captions, and we go and we do it like that. So in other words, so what happens in the end is, once, and by the way, then there's even, because we're with the publisher's paying the freight, they're paying us, they're paying the artists. And so we looked at a lot of different artwork. I mean, a lot of different artists, man. And not so. Not only did Chris and I have to agree on the artist, our editor at Titan had to agree, and then the publisher Charles R. Dye, who runs A Hard Case Crime, he had to agree. So let me tell you something. There was many a time when the three of us or the four of us were not on the same page. So that was a process. So finally, though, we all kind of got to the point where we all settled on Andrea, and once he came on board, I mean, it was just rocking.
Gotcha. Now, did you also? You said that the artist Andrea is his name.
I can't give the Italian pronunciation. So yeah,
that's okay. He's never been in the United States.
No,
you've been.
As far as I know,
have you been to Italy? Have you met him?
But I know that he's an Italian national. I know he lives in Italy.
Have you met him?
I have not met him. I've never met him personally.
So all the collaboration is
communicated on email.
Email and I assume Skype or telephone. And wow.
No, we never even got that far. I mean, basically, any time he had a question, he would ask us directly, and we would clarify.
Uh-huh.
And he'd go away and come back, and the problem would be solved. Yeah.
But did he develop, like, when you tell him what the action is going to be? Like, there's a scene where two guys go into a pizza place and they want to talk to this guy who's sitting down eating pizza, and
the guy who works. The guy who's the guy who works in P-Plan, yeah.
Right, and I don't want to give any about the story, but I'm looking at the panel. And the two guys go in and they're talking to the guy, and then there's a scene that's the point of view is from up above, and it's one of the guys working in the restaurant shoving the pizza into the pizza oven, and there's a TV showing off in the side, and some of the dialogue is happening off screen. And it's really interesting the way it pulls it together. But my question was, did you tell him how you wanted that to look, or does he take your dialogue and then kind of figure how he wants it to look?
No, we told him how we wanted it to look. As I said, we describe each panel. So we might say medium shot, we might say close up, reverse the point of view. So we use so we do use some movie direction shorthand because everybody knows it, right?
Yeah, right.
Gotcha. Or at least most comics artists know them because they do a lot of because right. What's comics but storyboards, right? Or storyboards are comics.
Sure.
The other way around, I guess. Sure. Right. So we're very clear, we're very precise about what's happening in each panel. Now, it certainly can be the case that an artist will come back and say, "Look, what you've described in this panel can't work, or I have a better idea for what will work," and we would certainly be open to that.
Uh-huh. Now, character development. Somebody has to come up with descriptions of these people. Is that you and Krista? And then he fleshes them out for you?
Yes. And of course, the shorthand now is that we invariably will use an actor. Or usually it's an actor, or maybe somebody in the public, and say this person kind of looks like this person, or is a cross between this person and that person, as a way to kind of help get to what the character looks like. I mean, that is, in fact, the great benefit, of course, now of, as I said, with the internet and everything, so that you can, so even if they're not familiar with who you're talking about, we'll send them a reference of that person, or maybe or it could be an uncle or a cousin. You say, look, I want this person to look like my cousin Bob, and here's what Bob looks like. In fact, a couple of characters in there are based on are real life people. So it's using those shorthands as a way to help the artist and visualize once they start to develop the model sheets for who the characters look like, their physical type, and what have you, and then helps them to help center who these characters are once you put them in motion on the page.
Was it a coincidence that the scene with the boss who's in the steam room that he looks a lot like Donald Trump?
I'll answer it this way. I'll answer it. Simon Wendt is the name of the character in the book, right?
Uh-huh.
I'll answer it this way. It so happens that in that specific period of time in actual history, there was a particular real estate mogul who helped lead the charge to revitalize and revamp Times Square.
Okay, then.
Right?
Yeah, that's so true. Okay.
So it was no accident.
So the guy in the steam room could have been Mickey Mouse, I guess.
He could have been.
Yeah.
He could have been.
Or Donald Duck.
But really, would it work with Mickey Mouse? Nah, probably not.
No, probably not.
Plus, Disney would sue us. So, you know, right. Yeah,
there you go. But it really works with Donald Trump.
Hey, the people that you know, since we've been on the air, our listenership has grown and grown and grown. And since you've been on, we've grown exponentially. And a lot of people don't really know what pulp fiction is and what pulp magazines are and stuff. So can you go through that explanation again real quick so listeners get a kind of a feel for what you do?
Take them down memory lane.
Yeah.
Well, I think that I write noir, I write hardball, and I write pulp, or what's called new pulp. Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, as we know, pulp was both an actual physical magazine, right? Because it was printed on cheap paper in the 30s, and at the height of the Great Depression, where you could buy I think it started for a dime and eventually became a quarter. But man, you could buy a big old a magazine size book. That had a feature story, which is usually about 50,000 to 60,000 words, and there's usually some character like the Shadow, Doc Savage, Captain Future, what have you. And then there would be some backup short stories, and a lot of times, because the pulp writers were so prolific, they would not only write the feature story, they would write some of the backup stories under different pen names, under different pseudonyms. Uh-huh. And so the paper itself was called pulp, but that style of writing, that staccato, bang out the plot, heavy on plot, not so much on characterization in those days, a lot of action, a lot of twists and turns, a lot of cliffhangers, a lot of backing your character into a corner and see what they could do next, and a lot of fantastic elements kind of became the pulp style. But let's bear in mind, too, there were some great pulp detective magazines, particularly I'm thinking of course, of Black Mask, where guys like Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett, John Carroll Daly, although nobody remembers John Carroll Daly now, but he probably is really the father or the godfather, at least, of the modern privatized story. His character, Race Williams, was a big deal in those days in the 20s and 30s in pulp magazines. And so the pulps had a wide range, right? You had sports stories, you had science fiction stories, you had adventure stories, you had masked costume character stories, you had westerns, of course, you had outer space. So you had a whole range of kinds of stories that the pulp magazines delivered, and this is concurrent, of course, with the rise of serials on the radio.
Sure.
But all that to say is that kind of style, that kind of fast-paced delivery, that kind of, like I said, sort of almost even hurried style. I mean, there's a great story about Walter Gibson, the man who essentially created The Shadow. And at one point, The Shadow was bi-monthly. That is to say, it had to be. It was so popular, it was published twice a month. And as I said, these stories, the lead stories, The Shadow story would be 50,000 or 60,000 words. What they called in those days a novel-length adventure. And so the story goes that Gibson, who made a quite a living writing these stories. He had, in fact, he'd been an assistant to Harry Houdini as a young man. So he used a lot of those elements in The Shadow. Stories. He apparently would have, the story goes that he would keep three or four typewriters lined up, and he would have different stories going in each typewriter. So he would get to work on one, he'd get stuck on something, he would go to the next typewriter.
On that one.
Yes, and he would get to work, and then he'd go to the next one, and then go back and forth like that, because he had to bang out all those, so many words a day.
Sure.
To meet his count, to meet the deadline.
Sure.
For what the market demanded. I mean, eventually, of course, the market dried up, certainly post World War II in the 40s. Right. But then we started getting the paperbacks and what have
you.
For a while there in the 30s, that was, that and radio, that was it, or maybe the movies, right?
Sure.
But there wasn't a lot of, certainly unlike today, it just in terms of kids and adults and what have you, it consumed a lot of eyes, on that material. But anyway, all that to say is that kind of style of writing you know, of course, faded out. Or but it actually, it kind of really morphed, right? Because, you know, you can certainly argue Mickey Spillane was a pulp writer, right?
Sure.
I mean, Mike Hammer, those are great sort of pulp. He wrote in that style, right? Very staccato, very fast-paced, very bang, 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 right? That, you know, and as we go through a story.
Right.
But those became a staple, right? Those you know, the Mike Hammer books became hugely successful.
Sure.
And so nowadays there's what they call the new pulp movement or style, which is to say some of those characters in the past, some are still licensed characters, right? The Shadow of Doc Savage, those are licensed characters. And in fact, I guess there's some talk that Shane Black might do this Doc Savage movie. But some of those characters have fallen into, because some of the publishers have gone away, have fallen into public domain. So what would have been, I guess what would have been called fan fiction about, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, have now become part of what's the new pulp, which is to say, because of, as you guys know, because of now the new methods in terms of print on demand and what have you, you don't have to make a huge run to get a book out there.
Right.
So now there's a lot of writers who've come along who've taken some of these old characters and writing new adventures about them, or created their own characters and sometimes have set them within the 30s and the 40s.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes they've been sort of revisionist stories too. But that style of writing, that pulp style of writing, certainly has never really gone out of fashion. I mean, you could certainly argue people like Clive Cussler, and even to some extent Patterson. I mean, if you read Patterson's stuff, he's very clever, right? They're very short chapters.
Chapters are like page and a quarter. Yeah.
Exactly. And each chapter ends on a kind of mini cliffhanger. So
right.
That stuff learned from the pulps, right? You know, and there you go. You're off to the races.
Yeah. You've also delved and you got your feet in the noir and just
right.
For just a few minutes, let's drop over to your new book that's coming out. I don't know if it's out yet or not. The Obama Inheritance, is that out now, Gary?
No, that'll be out in October. And the Obama Inheritance is definitely a blend of styles.
It is certainly that, if nothing else. That is true.
If nothing else. That's right. If nothing else. It is an anthology that I edited, but I also did a story for it.
Because,
of course, one of the benefits of being the editor is you can put your own story in the book. Now that's a story. That's an anthology where I told the various writers, I said, look, take any crazy conspiracy, any theory you want about Obama, and I want you to just run with it and sort of turn it on its head, but I want you to have fun. I want you to be
right.
Preachy. I don't want you to be in a soapbox. I want you to entertain.
Right.
I want you to give us, but in that regard, speaking of pulp, so these are really pulpy, sci-fi, out there, weird, strange stories. So
out there would certainly be the way to put it. The very first story throws you right under the bus.
So we've got Walter Mosley gave me a story. Niecy Shaw, who's kind of considered a sci-fi writer, gave me a story. Speaking of sci-fi, the great sci-fi master, in fact, he's the grandmaster for the Science Fiction Writers of America, Robert Silverberg, who's still around, gave us a story. So we've got a great collection of tales that I think, no matter which side of the aisle, as they say, you're on,
right.
I think you'll be entertained. You won't be preached to. And again, they move along, and they're short stories. So
right.
you get in, you get out. And we've got Lizard Men, we've got the Illuminati, we got everything going on.
May I just say that as they were in the spaceship and they were going towards, they had to go find the Obama.
Exactly.
Now this
exactly,
is
Jerry, exactly.
15 theories, and you call it conspiracy noir.
Yes.
Yeah, it's actually I don't want to get into it because it's not out yet, but it's actually quite an interesting read.
My question My question now would be that when this current administration leaves office, as much as you took Obama and put it like way out there, wouldn't you have to take Trump and like bring it in to say, well, this is how things would be if it was normal?
or Abby normal.
Yes. I think you're right, Russ. Well, yeah. Well, you know, as many people have said, right? As many writers have said, if you took where we're at now, and you know 3 or 4 years ago you wrote that as a screenplay, right? You'd be laughed out of the room.
Oh,
right?
For sure.
Well,
oh,
as a novel, because they say, "Oh man, that's too over the top. That's too crazy. That's too wild.
That's right.
That's too out there." Yeah.
I don't know.
So
if you're
right. So I guess the boomerang will be have to be Henry Fonda in is it Failsafe? In Failsafe.
Failsafe.
You know,
Failsafe. Yeah.
You know the calm, deliberate, thoughtful, insightful leader.
Right. which ours isn't.
Oh no.
Well, you know, if he's the Twitter king.
Yeah, you said that. I didn't say anything.
I know that.
You know, if you've ever watched the program Veep with Louise Dreyfus,
yes.
And I saw the entire cast interviewed not too long ago, and they were saying that every week the writers would come up with things and they'd have to change it because
Trump would do it.
Trump, yeah, exactly.
That's right. That you couldn't, right? Well, that's the problem they run into on the House of Cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
That even,
yeah,
you know, you even go. even as insane, even as out there as House of Cards got, they were like, oh my gosh,
that's tame compared to what's there now.
Exactly.
Okay, this is a question I have for you, Gary.
Sure.
I don't think we touched on this before. You're from Texas. Born there?
My daddy was from Texas. I'm from LA.
Okay. But how did you?
My daddy's from Texas.
How did you find yourself in the position that you are writing and loving, obviously, because you do such a great job at it? Pulp and modern pulp and noir and the novels that I've read that are straight. Where did it come to the point to the past that you really wanted to do that for a living?
Well, you know, it's a multi-layered answer, but here's the simple answer, Jerry. The real simple answer is this. When I was a kid coming up, because my dad was from Texas, and he was part of that sort of black migration from the 30s mm-hmm. And the 40s out west. When I was a kid coming up, my dad might be sitting around the kitchen table playing dominoes with some of his friends. Drinking a beer or two, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these are other men who came along like him. Some came from Texas, or some came from even, you know, Louisiana or from the Deep South, right?
Sure.
And they eventually all sort of came west, and they came west for work, and they wound up in somewhere. Veterans like my dad, a veteran of World War II, and they wound up in heavy industry and union jobs and all this stuff. But I was a kid, so I wasn't playing dominoes, and I certainly wasn't drinking beer. But I could hear their stories.
Uh-huh.
They would tell each other, you know, they would talk about the past, and they would talk about, you know, the hard times they came up in, but the colorful people they had met and the things they had done. And all those stories, man, were just in my head, you know? And it didn't hurt. By the way, it didn't hurt that, when I was a kid, I'd watch the old Twilight Zone reruns, you know, on TV, and my dad and I would watch. I never remembered any of the plots. I was way too young, but we would watch in the early 60s. We would watch Half Gun Will Travel.
Oh, absolutely! Love
Half Gun Will Travel.
Oh, we all did.
Yeah, and it's only, but something about that must have sunk in my brain, because now when I'm an old man watching on the old folks channel the reruns of Half Gun Will Travel, those are some great stories, though,
they
right?
are.
Those are some great they tales,
are.
Man.
They are.
Yeah. And so it's a combination of hearing those stories, those real stories from those real friends of my dad sitting around the kitchen table playing dominoes, as well as then I think the stuff I saw on TV, and I think it just fired my, and then plus of course I was reading comic books. So all that came together. Oh, don't let me forget to mention, my dad was a mechanic, but my mom was a librarian, so we always had books around the house.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So all that came together that it just fired my imagination. You know, I played sports in school and stuff like that, but man, it was just, you know, I just had a burning desire to tell some stories.
Uh-huh. Well, you do a good job at it. I do have to say that as far as one of the more prolific writers we've had on, you are one of the more prolific writers we've had on. And your genre,
well, I think
your genre,
is just
not prophylactic writers, Gary, prolific. And I mean, your genre is switched. I mean, you can write in so many different genres. So it's like amazing. I mean, most writers we know, it's really hard for them to switch genres. They can't do it. You know, you get locked into one.
I think what it is I just want to tell the story.
Yeah.
And I guess sometimes I'm asked, you know, if I'm doing a specific anthology or if I'm doing, you know, there's a particular theme, okay, you got to write to the theme. And I think too that to switch up or even mash up some of these genres, I think can be liberating. You know, I think it's a good stretch for you as a writer to try to, you know, you don't always succeed, but to try to try your hand at these various forms.
Sure.
And you know, and it kind of gives you, I think, a good workout of nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, in terms trying to get this stuff on the page.
Right. I just did a short story an actual true story from my my first tour in Vietnam, my last 12 days in the country. And
oh wow!
And it's called Real Life. And Short Time is actually the name of the story.
Yeah.
And I wrote it in first person. I've never written in first person before. And I found it came very naturally to me.
Yes.
And, and it was just really strange. And actually, this is going to Jeff MacArthur, who is putting together an anthology of Vietnam stories. So.
Oh, right on, man. That's terrific.
Yeah,
I look forward to reading
that. I hope you do. Have you ever had writer's block, Gary? I think we asked you this before, and I don't remember your answer.
I'm gonna answer like Trump would. Well, in a bigly way, no.
I know my wife Jerry is listening right now. She just heard that. She's probably cracking up.
Well,
bigly.
I'll be a little bit more serious.
Oh, okay.
If I get stuck, and I do get stuck, right? I think every writer gets stuck.
Sure.
I'll stop writing. I'll go trim the hedges. I'll go fix that faucet that the wife asked me to fix 3 months ago. I'll go do something else. I'll go to the gym. I'll go look outside at the old car that I need to get running, which I never will.
Yeah. Play dominoes and drink beer with your friends.
Play dominoes. Yeah, I can go find some friends. Play dominoes. Drink a few beers. I'll do something that sort of, you know, takes some of the pressure off. But knowing that in the back of my head, I'm still working the problem.
Right. You know, I think personally, and I don't think I've ever really expressed this on the show before, but I think personally that blocking it, when you have an actual writer's block. It's not a stumble, and it's not, you know, you're temporarily unable to write. I think that you are virtually blocked.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you leave it alone, like some people do for sometimes years before they come back to the product. You know, writers say, well, you know, I get stuck. Well, I don't think stuck is the same thing as being blocked.
I don't know.
I guess I'm surmising. Yeah. I don't know. What do I know?
But I know what you're saying. No, I know what you're saying. So I guess knock wood or knock against my head.
Right.
I haven't.
I do that often.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I have a bowling helmet. My head hits.
But having said that, it is certainly the case, though. I have gone down false trails as a writer.
Oh, me too.
I've gotten that you get. You know, you start working on a piece. And then, you know, you get a little ways into it and you think, man, this really sucks. And then, you know, which you kind of think sometimes that's true of everything, but then you really figure out there's really no way you try to work your way out of it. There's really no way to work out of it.
Right.
And you just, you got to leave it alone. You got to go do something else.
Right.
That happens. That certainly happens.
Yeah, that's when you have to rewrite.
Never been the case. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. Hey, we're going to be running out of time pretty quick. Why don't you let our guests know where you can, or our audience know where they can reach you? And what you got cooking?
Well, I tell you what, you know, in fact, Krista and I will be signing copies of the P-Plan graphic novel on Wednesday. I guess that's August. I better get the right. It's the
August,
first Wednesday
2nd?
In August. It's either the 2nd or the 3rd.
Yeah.
Is that the 2nd or the 3rd? Anyway, it's that first August and first Wednesday, August at Skylight Books in Los Feliz. And Obama Inheritance will be out in October, and like that. And they can always find me on the on them webs, gdphillips.com.
Okay. And you you have a Facebook page?
I don't really have a. I guess I'm supposed to have an author's page, which, you know, I just never got around to it.
Uh-huh.
I have a Facebook page. I mean, I have like a. I guess just a personal page.
Yeah.
I don't really have an author's page. Yeah, yeah. But I have a. You know, they can always find me on Facebook. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And under yeah. Gary Phillips.
Yes, that's correct. That's
cool. Right. Hey, I sent you a coffee mug before, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Well, if you could have lied, so I would have sent you another one.
It's a lovely thing.
are you drinking a beer out of it right now?
I'm not. I'm clean and sober at this moment.
Playing dominoes and drinking a beer out of my coffee mug. I like it.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, again, Gary, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a fascinating time. We look up at the clock and it's going, wow, we're out of time.
I just love it. It was great. This was great, you guys. It was terrific. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. And, you know, get a hold of the bookie. I'm sure she'll love to hear from you, and we probably can get you in next year. You know who's going to be on next year with us? I have to tell you this.
Who?
John
who?
Sanford. You know who he is?
Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah, big time. Very good.
Yeah. He's going to be on with us in April.
Excellent. That's terrific.
Yeah. We scored a major coup with that one.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And Craig Johnson from the Longmire fame will be back with us.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Back with us
the
24th of next month.
I know Craig slightly.
Craig's a good guy. He and Jerry have gotten along. He and Jerry have become best buds. So,
right on, man.
So, anyway, that's who we got coming on. So we're getting some pretty named people in here. So we're just enjoying the hell out of it.
And you got me.
And we got Russ. And we got you, Gary. So there you go.
There you go.
Okay, my friends.
Wait, what more? What more do you need?
Nothing. Take care, my friend. We'll be talking.
Thank you, baby.
Okay,
thank you,
Gary. Bye-bye, Gary.
Take care.
All right, now you guys. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Gary Phillips.
Boy, I could talk with him for hours.
I know. Isn't he fascinating? Yeah. I told you. The guy's really a good guest, and he's really smart. He's really a smart dude.
This is a guy, though, I just feel like I'd like to sit down in the living room and just kick back and
play dominoes and drink some beer with him.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the guy is so good at what he does.
O'Doul's beer.
Well,
O'Doul's.
You drink O'Doul's?
No, that's what he's clean and sober. We would have
no,
serve
right now.
O'Doul's. Well, okay, maybe not later on tonight, and certainly not after this interview.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, August we have a pretty good lineup coming up. Now, August 3rd, we have Caroline Giamanco. She is she's be for her second time on the show. She's wrote the book The Boonie Hat Bandit, and she's got a sequel to that. She'll be talking about it with us. She's on next Thursday, and the following Thursday after that is Patrick Brown. Then we get another return engagement with Chuck Walsh, who was here last year. He's a South Carolina boy. And August 24th, Craig Johnson, Longmire. He'll be back for his second time on the writer's block. August 31st, we have The Books from Hell. Mike Bond is going to be with us.
The Books from Hell?
Yeah, he's written a couple books. Well, he's written more than a couple, but the ones we specifically have is called, one of them is Assassins, and the other is Snow. And Assassins is turning out to be quite the story.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Halfway through that
Me
one,
too.
Actually.
Me too, actually. And I'm really
well,
like
you
it.
Love it because you were in country. You know,
well,
Vietnam,
not so, I wasn't there, I mean, but I was over.
No, but you're in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's
yeah, combat is combat.
Yeah.
And then September 7th, we have a very special two-hour show going on. And we're going to have in studio Richard Palinelli, and on the phone we'll have Kathleen Rogers. And I believe we're going to have some other authors call in from other places, and possibly some agents and some publishers. And the show is going to be about agents and publishers and writers. And so that's the night that if you're going to call in, that's the night you want to call in, because we're going to have a pretty good cast here.
And if you're going to be having agents and
publishers?
Publishers.
Yeah.
Are you going to have security here so that nothing erupts?
Yeah, I know, huh?
Yeah.
I know, huh? And there's a lot of writers out there that are pretty disgusted with agents right now. So I think that it's going to be a very interesting show, to say the least. and a teaser, mentioning John Sanford, he'll be in with us in April. We also have a young lady named Bianca Murray, and she wrote a book, Hum, If You Don't Know the Words. It's about her life growing up in South Africa under apartheid. It proves that it's going to prove to be a pretty good hour. So we have some excellent, excellent guests coming in, and we've had just some excellent guests on, and we have more booked, and we're just, I mean, we're already in year number three.
It's amazing.
I know, huh?
Yeah.
It's just keeps getting better and better. And again, I want to thank Gary Phillips for joining us tonight. The guy is just amazing. He just, every time I talk to him, he amazes me more. And Russ, always good having you here, buddy.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
It is. Oh, my pleasure. I just like Jerry keeps telling me, and I try my best to get these people on, and you know, I worry and I fret, and I said, don't. You know. We are booked up through April. Don't.
I know. Turn, kick back. Have a drink.
I know.
And relax.
You know, go have a toddy, yeah. Or two or three. You know. Anyway, that's it for tonight for us. It's been another wonderful evening here on Thursday night on LA Talk Radio. And this is the Writer's Block, and we are out of here.